fuck you! Australia! Germany!
Go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Microphone. Sure. Well, it's not the mic, it's the board. I'm sorry about the late start, but there was a there was an absolute incessant flurry of sneezing involved that lasted what felt like forever. And I'm not sure, but I think I may have lost some of my brains. Where's the sound? There should be sound. I'll kind of wait and let the music play along and whatnot. Okay. I threw the third switch. Okay, WTTT. Live program, yes. This makes for a great podcast, by the way, I can tell you. Now, I feel great. Which is, you know, sarcasm. Because I don't feel... Okay. Okay, hold on. Wasn't that just lovely news? 404 error from the server. Stand by. Because I'm ascending. All right, be right back.
Tokyo, Australia, Germany, Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy, let's try this again. Okay, first it was a sneezing fit, and I was about 45 seconds late to the microphone or something. And then I started broadcasting and said, and everybody in the chat room, good evening, Jug of Punch and King of Cups and Labor Man and Texas Tea. Good evening, Lottie and Sparky, capable, inveterate, indefatigable, longtime chat room veteran moderators. Said, hey, where's the program? And I said, well, right here's the program. I mean, I'm doing the program. And they said, no, you're not. We're getting a 404 error. And I said, well, son of a gun. And so we stopped everything. And so that's why those of you who are listening to the podcast right now are going, wait, he's already played the intro. Yeah, I did. Yes. But it seemed like kind of a reboot was in order, and I was just too damned lazy to go in, delete the file, reestablish the file, and start recording all over again. So I probably should have just told you to fast forward past the I can't do that, can I? No. It's kind of like the letter that the mother wrote to her son saying, in the letter she said, I was going to send you some money, but I've already licked the envelope and right. Hi. I'm Bob Kincaid. I am congested, sneezing, coughing, achy, probably should be drinking NyQuil through a straw, Bob Kincaid. Actually, I can't drink NyQuil. And in the absence of NyQuil, you know, bourbon will do, but I'm fresh out of that, too. It's going to be, that's exactly what it is. In the chat room, the topic is Shit Happens Friday. And that it does. I think I would probably... I think I'd probably feel better if I hadn't sat up watching the damn stupid, ignorant, right-wing Republican pageant. God almighty. I mean, there was a lifetime's worth of stupid in that last night. And so, but I, and you know, this is apparently the flu. Sure hope it's not the goddamn Zika. Should have known better than to go drinking late at night with that mosquito. Oh well. Yes. We're going to get there, Brother Deacon Asa. We are going to get there. My God, that was a tour de force of Moran. Marty just said, if you've got the Zika, I hope you're not pregnant. I do too. But then again, you know, you know what those goddamn Republicans say, you know, if the Democrats get a hold of the government, keep control of the, oh my God, everybody will have to go and have an abortion. I'll take a number. I mean, it was astonishing last night. like I said, an absolute pièce de résistance of Moranity. They should have held that on Monday. I mean, we had everything, and of course, you know, the conversations regarding the pénis de Trump, because you know you got to make it sound all Frenchy, because that means it's classy, because everything Trump does is classy. There were allusions to Trump's penis. Although, as Ron in the far frozen north says, my favorite tweet of the night said, if Trump cut 2 inches off his penis, he'd have a wound on his ass. and that occasioned quite a bit of controversy, the penile references. I mean, Jesus, when they went to break, could they at least not have had it brought to you by Viagra? I don't need any Viagra. It's huge. But there were people who said, you know, that truly, truly, goddamn it, truly, the state of political discourse in the United States has fallen all apart. I mean, this is the end. You know, we've got Republican candidates out there making dick jokes. Right? Sure. Which is fine, but, you know, if you're going to say once upon a time we had a political political atmosphere in which, you know, there wasn't such nastiness going on. Can I just be a history buff for a minute and ask people, was that the first presidential election when George Washington rode to his inauguration on his fucking unicorn? Is that when it was nice? Is that when it was polite? Because, see, in the 1800 election, when John Adams and Thomas Jefferson were going at it hammer and tongs, well, among other things, John Adams said, or a partisan of John Adams, a partisan of John Adams, John Adams didn't do it, but a partisan of John Adams, of course, leapt onto Thomas Jefferson about Sally Hemings.
Well, you know, he has been having sexual congress with a negress, don't you?
Right. So either before that happened, which caused that to be said, or after that happened, which is why this was said, Jefferson shot back regarding John Adams with the following, that John Adams is a hideous, hermaphroditical character which has neither the force and firmness of a man nor the gentleness and sensibility of a woman. In other words, they said, you know he's romping with a black woman, and Thomas Jefferson shot back and said, well, at least I can romp with a black woman. John Adams is a hermaphrodite. So, I mean, let's not quite get our knickers in such a twist. But there was that. And then, of course, and I actually didn't see it in real time because I was watching on a tiny screen. But, I mean, if you're a regular who tunes into this program, you know that I'm frequently found using the phrase birther, deather, ninther, tenther, bagger, bircher,
booger eater.
And last night,
because the goddess of irony is a good goddess, and she loves us because we pay her such homage. God, over the years, I think I've probably sacrificed a trailer truckload of rubber chickens and whoopee cushions, at midnight, of course, to the goddess of irony. Booger Eater is not just a figure of speech. And that's what Brother Deacon Asa wanted me to remind you of. Last night, we saw the number two. Ha, see what I did there? Yeah. We saw the number two Republican candidate in the 2016 election cycle, to wit, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed future king of America, son of Rafael Eduardo Cruz, the man who forgot to become an American for a really long time, eat a booger. Mm-hmm. Because he did. And of course, it becomes even more Schadenfreude wonderful, because Ayatollah Ted is God's chosen candidate. Just ask his daddy; he'll tell you. And so, Jesus H. Christ. I don't know. The H may be for hermaphroditical. Ask Thomas Jefferson. Jesus H. Christ made his chosen candidate, made a booger come slowly dripping out of Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz's nose to where it just lingered on the corner, on the left corner of his upper lip as he talked and talked and talked and talked, about how awesome he was or what the fuck ever. And then you can watch it in close up. It's on my Facebook page, Bob Kincaid. And then suddenly the boogie drops to his lower lip. And he keeps talking, and it just sits there, perched on his lower lip, like Poe's raven on the pallid bust of Pallas. It perches there, and he talks, and he talks, and he keeps talking. And then all of a sudden he takes a little bit of a pause, and he goes, and suddenly, the booger is gone. And of course, this was all done by the goddess of irony, because I think I was given the powers of the ironic spirit. I was given the perception of ironic prophecy and interpretation. This all happened because the entire Republican pageant series has been reduced to the schoolyard squabbles and slap fights. And so the goddess of irony made sure that the rest of the world could have that made manifest for them. If Rafaelito had dragged his clenched fist across his nose like a 5-year-old, it could not have been made any clearer that is exactly the mentality of the candidates with whom we are dealing. There was another wide shot prior to a break in which we saw little Marco Rubio kind of go up on tippy toes And then he flexed one leg backwards and then another leg backwards like he was sort of running in place. I don't know if he was trying to maybe grow a little bit or who knows. And so, I mean, it was a perfect storm of Moran. Even John Kasich got caught up in the thumping that the Goddess of Irony was delivering. Because when they finally late in the game got around to see, they were doing this in Detroit. When they finally got around to discussing the Flint water crisis, well, there was all kinds of pretzelification. Whew, that's tough. That's tough when you don't have a head cold. But along the way, John Kasich said something like, he was, look at us, look at what's up here, my God. And then he said something like, there are people out there who, oh, let me see if I can find it, because I quoted it at the time. Just one second. Probably better to go all the way top and back. There it is. There it is. Kasich said, they, you know, meaning us, the little people, they see the rich get richer, they believe. They see the rich get richer, they believe. And then he continued. And while I didn't see the booger consumption on the first go round, I heard that and it was like a damn klaxon going off. Because I pay attention to these things. I pay attention, well, pretty close attention to language and how it's used, because I am a longtime practitioner of the art of word knowing. And when he had to add that, I mean, you could hear the ellipsis, you could hear the dot, 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 they believe. I mean, for a minute there, I was going, wait, is he going to, did he just, and then he goes, they believe, so there isn't really, the rich aren't really getting richer. There isn't really income inequality. It's just that we little people, we proles in our multitudes, we believe the rich are getting richer. And if you use that toxic word that I have so often described as the most dangerous word in the English language, believe, then what you're saying is, it's not really so. So there was that too. And the booger eating was pretty spectacular, and damn Ron and Raleigh, I'm sorry. For God's sake, Bob, I did not see this. I don't want to see this. Hell, it's bad enough to hear you talk about it. Keep it brief, please. Darlene Darlene in Connecticut is of a like mind with Ron and Raleigh. You're killing me. Stop, Bob. Uncle, I practically, literally, almost puked this morning watching the Cruz booger incident unfold on Democracy Now. I even had the video on full screen, which I rarely do, so I saw the whole thing in its intense, uncensored glory. I had to stop myself just now from retching again when you were so vividly describing what happened. Barf! All right, I mean, I'm trying to get past it. I mean, I understand. Jim just dropped a note and said, last night I wish one of the moderators would have screamed, "Everyone out of the pool," or "Heads on your desks. Quiet time, children." Disgusted. And it was. That's probably the best word for it, Jim. It was a disgusting display of puerile idiocy. I fear there will be a number of such pauses such as that this evening. I mean, the sneezing is relentless. But it was the idea that any of those four people could ever be the president of the United States, and what would happen to this country if they were, is terrifying. And you know, little Marco decided to go down and wallow and start playing the game, and Rafi Alito decided to wallow and start playing Trump's game. And it was pretty clear that the goal of Fox News TV Radio Rwanda was to try to slow the momentum of Donald Trump. Trumpmentum? Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it worked or not. I thought it hilarious that after the pageant was over, they had the falafel man Bill O'Reilly right there to interview Drumpf right then and right there. I don't know if it's in Drumpf's contract or not, or O'Reilly's for that matter. But he was the first person they spoke to. I feel great. Yeah. And I'll be honest. I will be disappointed in Donald Trump if he does not make a political ad out of Ted Cruz eating a booger. By the way, we now have to modify the formal reference to Ted Cruz. You know, it's been over a year now that he's been Rafi Alito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed future king of America, yada, yada, yada. He is now Rafi Alito Eduardo Cruz, the booger-eating future king of America, the anointed booger-eating future king of America. It may take some work, but I'll get it down. And I'm being told by Ron in the far frozen north, that what little Marco was doing, you know, kicking up his little high heels, he said, "Bob, that's a yoga move by Tiny Marco to scratch that rectal itch that you can't dig at on TV." No, that's in the next pageant. I would prefer that it be Rafi Alito who does it, but the goddess of irony will probably pass it around. No, the next time through, we'll catch little Marco Rubio scratching his ass and giving it a sniff. Sorry, Darlene. It was a clown show. And look, I'm unabashedly a supporter of Bernie Sanders, and I got a lot of problems with Hillary Clinton's policies. A lot of problems. But all you had to do, if you had an IQ an IQ above bong water temperature, You know, you like your bong water cold. The metaphor is failing. But if you had anything resembling functioning human cognition, all you had to do was watch that and go, well, there is no way anybody's going to make me vote for any of these jackasses. At one point in time, little Marco said, well, you know, I give credit to the governor of Michigan when they were talking about the Flint. Credit? Credit for time served, maybe. But he needs to go away for about 50 years before you can do that. In the chat room, Dogman says, Drumpf must like flypaper because he loves him some tacky. Well, he's gauche. He's nouveau riche. He's not properly wealthy. Well, that's true. Ron points out, you know, there's never been a really good song about dingleberries, just saying. Dig it. Ron also knows that there are some reports out there that O'Reilly was hammered during the post-debate interview and commentary. Wouldn't surprise me. He's had a tough week. You know, he lost custody of his kids in court. That's the last I'm going to say about that. So, there was a veritable hit parade of lunacy. And frankly, Darlene, I am surprised. Do you mean to tell me that Amy Goodman... Amy, serious journalist Goodman. I mean, we expect me to go for a good wallow once in a while, right? Are you telling me Amy Goodman did the booger eater story? Wow. I don't feel so bad about this now. But after all of that, and toward the end of the program, I think it was during his closing, his summation, little Marco Rubio took the cake for me. Yeah. By the way, there was another moment when little Marco said, trying to gin up some, drum up some love from the gun goobers. He said, well, I mean, there's a reason the Second Amendment's the Second Amendment. They put it there because of how important it is. And honest to God, I could have had a V8 slap to the head. You stupid fuck. Because he is. In that little tiny moment of time, we found out that little Marco, whatever the hell else he's done with his life, he didn't spend any time actually studying the origins of the Constitution and Bill of Rights. Jesus, he could have downloaded one of the podcasts from Dr. Bill for free and found out that the Bill of Rights were not put there in any particular order. Because, you know, the people who wrote it said so. I mean, there's not even any equivocation about it. They said, you know, no, the first isn't the first because it was the best or the second, the third, what, or, you know, or the rule against warrantless searches and seizures because it was the fourth most important thing. I mean, Jesus Christ, a man's home and his we're speaking 18th century English. A man's home is his castle. What's more important than that? Oh, you can leave your house and go to church, so the First Amendment's going to be no. I mean, if you were going to list them in order of importance, the Fourth Amendment should probably be the first. But little Marco Rubio was, I don't know, out getting high or something that day. There are rumors of his irresolute youth, shall we say, in South Florida. But so we don't know much about civics. So we got that. But it was at the very end of the pageant. Oh, and by the way, there was the moment when standing there on a stage in an auditorium in Detroit, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, anointed booger-eating future king of America, son of Rafael Eduardo Cruz, the man who forgot to become an American for a very long time. See? We've already got it. When he began to get all misty-eyed and talk about how America needs great men like Henry Ford, who invented the automobile and built them right here in Detroit and pulled himself up from his own by his own jockstrap or bootstraps. At which point my history gene kicked in and I went, wait. Are we talking about the same Henry Ford who was the publisher of the Dearborn Independent? The most radical, obnoxious, hate-filled, nasty, anti-Semitic newspaper in the entire United States? That Henry Ford? Are we talking about the Henry Ford who thought fascism was a great idea and that Mr. Hister was really onto something? Not so fast, Gerald. That Henry Ford? But then again, I know these things, you know these things, we know these things. Most of America doesn't. So there was that. The Rafaelito used the word tenuous. He said Donald has a tenuous relationship with the truth, which is really cute. And when you say that at moot court in law school, everybody titters mirthfully into the backs of their hands. Oh, witty. But when you use a word like tenuous to a Republican audience, their eyes just all roll back in their head and they, what'd him say? But the one that just really pushed me over the edge, the one that just finished it all, the big juicy cherry on top of the cow pie, was when, during his summation, little Marco said, And he was wrought, too, by the way. I mean, he was getting worked up. Little Marco said, and Bernie Sanders is a socialist. Well, if you want socialism, go live in a socialist country. And he was about to say like, and he either thought better of it or couldn't come up with one. Not sure which. You go live in Sweden. Or one of those countries where you can go to college for free or go to the doctor when you're sick. Is it too late for me to emigrate? But that one, oh, that one ran through me like a dose of salts. The nerve of a first-generation immigrant from Cuba to the United States to tell those of us who are voting for Bernie Sanders, who want Bernie Sanders to be president, who desperately yearn for a better America, not the nightmare hellscape that those fuckwits are putting on offer. The nerve of that little pissant pipsqueak to tell us to go somewhere else, fuck off. Oh, that was infuriating. No, Marco, what we would prefer is to make this country better than the wreckage you want to reduce it to. You shit weasel. Tell me to go somewhere else. Get fucked with a red hot paper clip, you fucking midget. Sorry. Because, see, I can't immigrate anywhere. I'm 53 years old. I kind of have to stay here and fight for what, I have to fight for what my ancestors 8, 9, 10 generations ago stole fair and square. But that's always been the way of it in Appalachia. Whatever you got, you got a bust ass to hang on to, because there's always some guy in a silk suit coming up the road with papers that you can't read and a jug of store bought liquor and a sign here. But the idea that little shit weasel would tell the rest of us to go somewhere else so they can turn this country into some sort of anarcho-randian steroidal capitalism nightmare. No. And see, there's one other thing. The little fucker is lucky to even be here. Because see, other people, like those Mexicans that he wants to shit on, they don't have the benefit that so many Cubans coming to the United States did. There's no Mexican dry foot policy. There's no El Salvadoran dry foot policy. There's no Guatemalan, Honduran, Nicaraguan, Costa Rican, Panamanian, Colombian, Peruvian, Ecuadorian, Bolivian, Chilean, Argentinian, Brazilian dry foot policy. Hell, there's not an Irish dry foot policy. And, of course, you know what that is. After Fidel Castro took power in Cuba, and after the embargo, and after the permanent state of unspoken warfare was declared, the United States government announced a policy that if Cubans were caught in boats at sea, they would be sent home, back to Cuba. But if they could get one dry foot, not even two, one dry foot on American soil, they got to stay. What if we had a Mexican dry foot policy? Well, we wouldn't have an immigration crisis. Yeah, you get your 2 feet wet in the Rio Grande, and then you stick 1 foot up onto Texas soil, and why, hail, fellow, well met. Welcome to America. But for all the insanity that was there, that moment, which blew by a lot of people who were already, I guess, mind-numbed with penis references and boogers and what have you, that moment defined it. The idea that this little first-generation pissant can all of a sudden go all nativist was amazing to me. I mean, he took a big steaming shit on the hard work of generations who have tried to make each generation's lives better than the one that went before. Now, I'm not a nativist. I'm not a nationalist. I'm not a fascist. I'm not a xenophobe. I would dearly love to see Cuba. I'd love to have enough Spanish to carry on conversations. I'd love to broadcast from Cuba. Who am I kidding? I want to broadcast from the Floridita bar. Damn straight. You know, if I become a Canadian, I probably can. But again, I'm stuck here. Marco, I can't leave. Because nobody wants older Americans. If I was younger, I'd already be gone. I'd find me some sort of a skill and get them out. I'd go to D.C., walk in the door of the Australian embassy and plead sanctuary because we've talked about before, because of the guns. But I can't. I can't leave, Mario. Marco, whatever your name is, little fella, I can't leave. And, of course, because I'm Scots-Irish, my inclination is to wait till you're not looking and kick you in the balls anyway. Well, thank you, Ron. Thank you kindly. Ron says, all that therapy seems to be working, Bob. You're doing a great job of coming out of your shell. Just remember, shyness is all in my head. I can work through this. No, you know, Ron, I imagine there are some Kincaids in Canada, but you know what? You know who's got cousins in Canada? Agnes has cousins in Canada. Because way back long about the Revolution, and these would be distant cousins, some of them who were not keen on this here revolution notion sort of packed up bag and baggage there in Philly and went up, for all I know, Nova Scotia way. Alexander Bartram packed up bag and baggage and went to Nova Scotia. I just had to holler through the soundproof glass. Oh well, okay. See, they're still a little tetchy about it over there in the Bartram bunch. Agnes says he was exiled. Okay, good. So I was not alone. Brother Deacon Asa says, everything that you just unleashed on that little shit weasel was everything I was thinking when I heard that prick make that comment last night. I've always maintained that little Marcio is filthier than we've given him credit for. Me too, and I think he proved it last night with whipped cream on it. Dogman in the chat room says, it's sickening that Joe on MSNBC gets that much time on TV and we can't hold a candle to your wit. Wisconsin Avenue's nice. I've been to Wisconsin Avenue. It's where the Best Buy is. From the mailbag. Steve in New York says, subject line, Dingleberries, Ron. There was a record store, BCD, before Compact Discs, named that in Dayton when I lived there. I'll be dipped. Damn it, did I? grammar correction from Steve in New York. You said Bill of Rights were. It should be Bill of Rights was. Tisk, tisk, young Robert. You're absolutely. Bill was, not rights were. Wait a minute. If one is speaking of the rights enumerated and the order in which they are placed, I think it would be were, wouldn't it? Or is that only in the pluperfect gerundive? In the subjunctive mood. Meanwhile, Michael says, the invention of the automobile, if Marco Polo knows his history, Dr. Carl Benz basically invented the automobile. Henry Ford is credited to mass producing it. Exactly. And I'm not exactly sure what the language was, but it was there. Steve noting that as well. Marty pointing out, not to mention, Rubio is the son of a family who no doubt supported the Batista regime in Cuba. Because, see, early on, and everybody seems to have forgotten this, because little Marco is a serial liar. He used to tell everybody that his grampy left Cuba, or his daddy, or what? No, his grampy, because he's still wet behind the ears. So I guess he's second generation, maybe? I don't know. Who gives a shit? But that his whoever it was left Cuba fleeing Castro's persecution. And then, like, the Miami Herald or the Tampa Bay Tribune or something looked into it and went, no, they left before the revolution. Oh, really? Yeah. But then again, he's a malleable little pimple as it is. Because he can't even settle down on a religion. He was Catholic. Then he was a Mormon for a while. And last I heard, he's attending a mega church and a Roman Catholic church. Looking for a loophole. Jim, describing it all last night, said, Bob, it was nothing but white trash, period, with not a modicum of veneer. Oh, no. The rubber masks are all off, Jim. And out in Kansas stand the marvelously coherent Diane, says under the subject line, new words. I'm learning new words tonight, such as pissant and shitweasel. And you know what? I'll feel like my mission has been partially completed, Diane, when you begin working them into everyday English. You know, like from the lectern. By the way, speaking of Cuban immigration, Ron in Raleigh writes, did you know that there's a brisk business of Cubans immigrating to the U.S. through Laredo, Texas via Nuevo Laredo, Mexico? The immigration takes 45 minutes to 1 hour to complete, and then the newly immigrated get full benefits. The Mexicans, that's anyone from south of the border, you know, actually Mexico, they're a little put off by this. So we've still got that special status. Ron in the far frozen north says, I'm sure all is forgiven by now, even in a Scots-Irish family, regarding Agnes's ancestors. Ah, scrod, Ron tells us, is a wonderful fish dish in Boston. It's also the past pluperfect of current Republican positions. He had scrod, he will have scrod, absolutely. We've been scrod, right. I had no idea. Well, there went my happy mood for the evening. Ron just told me, by the way, did you know that Gladys Knight is now a Mormon? And then one last little thing before we go to the break. And this is Friday on the Front Porch, by the way. Oh, time out. You know, I'd actually let you hear one of those sneezes, but it'd blow out the diaphragm and the mic. One last little thing. I got a note from Dr. John last night. And all it said, let me get it here. All it said was, that address looks familiar. And so I opened the email, and Dr. John writes, Jesus, Bob, does Boss Man Wayne ever run into these assholes at the post office? I could think of a good ancillary use for his spider-proof gloves. Yes, Dogman pointing out, America's oldest living botanical garden features an 18th-century farmstead, native plants, wildflower meadow, and wetland located in Philadelphia. Dogman is, of course, talking about Bartram's Gardens. And John Bartram, drinking buddy of Benjamin Franklin, who created that, is Agnes's great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather. That's one of the nifty things about... for a while there, I thought we might be well on the way to breeding the Kwisatz Haderach, because in Agnes, you've got America's... she's a direct descendant of America's first environmentalist. I, on the other hand, am a direct descendant of the man who first published all the works of the Scottish Enlightenment, which provided the basis and informed the sensibilities of the Declaration of Independence. How about that? But anyway, Dr. John says, I can think of a good ancillary use for his spider-proof gloves, and directed me to a photograph. People all over West Virginia, southern West Virginia in particular, have of late been getting up in the morning, and a woman on Facebook says, so this morning many people of Milton had this on their porch, bags of white rice and recruiting information for the KKK. It's 2016 and this is still a thing, the young woman writes. I'm in shock. Well, don't be in shock. It's 2016, and of course this is still a thing. Because this is still a deeply, tragically, sickeningly racist nation. So there it is. It's a little Ziploc bag, and it's got some white rice. Get it? White rice, white race. And it's got a piece of paper inside it of a Klansman carrying holding aloft a burning cross with the full robes and the hood and whatever you call the get-up that you put on the horse. And it says, Original Knight Riders, Knights of the Ku Klux Klan, National Office. National Office. MB 181 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, Beckley, BECKLEY, WV 25801. You recognize that? Here, let me put it in context. We try to run this radio network on a shoestring, and as such, we try to raise about $200 every evening. 10 at 20, 20 at 10, 1 at 200, 2 at 100, 4 at 50, 8 at 25, 16 at 1250, 32 at 6 and a quarter. And, you know, the PayPal interface is at headonradionetwork.com. under the tab Contribute. But if you prefer to use the U.S. Postal Service, please don't send cash, as there is a pilferage problem. Now I'm beginning to wonder if I know where that is. The mailing address is The Horn for checks and money orders, made payable to The Horn, not Bob Kincaid. I never see him. Boss Man Wayne does. The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318. Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V 25801. Yeah, we're about 119. We're about 128 box numbers over from the fucking Klan. By the way, their website is www.originalknightriders.net. And their hotline number is 936-223-5738. This is not an advertisement. But it looks like, and this may get confusing, don't do anything right off the bat. Yeah, you're right. Barbie says, you know, I told Carol months ago we've been transported back to 1968. I wonder, Barbie, if we haven't been transported back to 1868. No, Isaac, I'm not going to call the Klan on the air. We had our fun last night. But I don't know. We may have to change our mailing address. Because what it boils down to, because you know, sooner or later questions were going to be asked, so I'm going to answer them in advance. That's a UPS store. That's what that, because it's right there on a road that Boss Man Wayne travels daily. And so it's convenient for him. And God knows I've got the address so memorized it'll take me forever to re-memorize another one. You know, why should we have to move? Here's a question. Why does the United Parcel Service, UPS, why does the United Parcel Service do business with the Klan? Because, see, it's not quite the same as, you know, religious discrimination. This is the fucking Klan. The filthy, knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing, toenail-clipping, toothpicking, booger-eating, murderous, bloodthirsty, lynching, tormenting, did I mention murderous, Ku Klux Klan. Why does a giant corporation like the United Parcel Service, UPS, do business with the Klan? Now, see, if this was a mailbox that was owned by West Virginian Joe Smith and he just happens to be the Klan, no. But see, Boss Man Wayne already knew about this, and Boss Man Wayne is as or more disturbed by this than I am. And so he asked questions. And he gets told, well, you know, they always pay on time, hardly ever see them. And I've talked to corporate, and corporate says we can't do anything about it because, you know, they'd sue us. You know what? I'll bet you that if the Klan, the fucking Klan, sued United Parcel Service, and United Parcel Service said, suck me, I'll bet you it would be the PR event of the year for UPS. So I'm going to start asking, because this story is all over West Virginia, and now it's getting out into the larger world. Why does UPS openly and knowingly do business with the Klan? Now, we've kind of had this conversation before. Over the Confederate flag regarding the Confederate flag issue in South Carolina stand. And within corporate governance, Diane, within corporate governance, wouldn't this be something that the United Parcel Service would want to resolve, like, yesterday? Is this an appropriate use of popular pressure, or would we be trampling the Klan's civil rights? Or is this one of those John Kasuch moments where he says, if you're in business, do business. If you're in religion, do religion. Because I think it's okay to discriminate against hate groups that have a history of committing murder. So I've asked you to support the AIC Act, that kind of thing. But I almost never say anything by way of, you know, sign this petition or call somebody or do something. This is one of those moments. Cost you nothing. Are you on Twitter? Are you on Facebook? Hell, just email. Let's get something started here. Let's put pressure on UPS to stop doing business with the Klan. Because you know what? If it's not okay for a national presidential candidate to be endorsed by the Klan, why is it okay for one of America's leading shipping companies to do business with them? Thank you for the clarification, Steve. In New York, the Klan, they're not a hate group. They're a terrorist organization. Exactly. Steve also points out, tell UPS about their customer. Oh, here's the number. UPS World Headquarters, 55 Glenlake Parkway Northeast, Atlanta, Georgia, 30328. United States, dial 800-PICK-UPS. And you know, I don't want credit for this. I just want the Klan out of my UPS store. Maybe we need to pick it. I'll do it. I mean, Jesus, it's a moral act, isn't it?
Diane confirms the marvelously coherent Diane Kansastan, subject line corporate governance. Diane confirms most boards respond when there's enough media attention and stakeholder pressure. Well, I'm not going to do any more business with UPS. And I have a reason to do business with UPS. I can't seem to ship anything through the United States Postal Service without something going sideways somewhere. So look them up. Find out what their handle is on Twitter. If you're on Twitter, tweet at them. If you're on Facebook, find them on Facebook and message them. Why are you doing business with the Klan? Anybody want to get a note out to the NAACP? If you follow our buddy Angry, at the Angry Indian, he's got a picture on his timeline. Sparky just provided me the link. This is what hashtag Trump has instigated in hashtag West Virginia. Question, why is the UPS delivering post to the Klan? It's a damned fine question. Now, to be fair, this isn't necessarily because of Trump. We've had an ugly Klan presence here. We used to have the home office of some portion of the Nazi Party in Spencer, Roane County, West Virginia. Okay, cool. Thank you, Dogman. Dogman says, I'm a member of the local NAACP chapter. I'll check to see what's up. Cool. You know, and it's not just black people that the Klan hates. Maybe we could get the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith to ask UPS why they're doing business with the Klan? How about the Southern Poverty Law Center? And see, here's the thing. Whoever has it is in hiding. UPS will not divulge the name of the person behind this address. We tried. I can't divulge that. Huh. Now, it's obvious because, see, UPS didn't do it, and they're not the U.S. Postal Service, and they're not a governmental agency, although one more election cycle, and they may be. They committed these goddamn filthy Klansmen committed a crime. Because they went up on people's porches and left these bags of rice. And if you are a person of color and found that on your porch, I guarantee you, you were intimidated. You felt threatened. Maybe a criminal charge of trespass or an actual law enforcement investigation of same would divulge who's behind that address. Because that person lives in Beckley, West Virginia, and moves around and people go, well, hi, Fred. And they don't know that he's secretly the Grand Imperial 32nd Degree Noble Kleagle Wizard
They just think he's a nice guy. What a nice guy. Jim apparently recommends against picketing the UPS store. He says the Klan and UPS, because they can. You picket that place and you would be shot, period. Really? For picketing a UPS joint? Took me a minute. Subject line, a mission from God. Ray in Florida writes, I hate West Virginia Nazi. You'll get it in a sec. Probably already got it. Note coming in from Brother Deacon Asa. Why does the UPS do business with the Klan? Bob, may I observe, based on my own limited experience with the UPS store, each of those stores are owned by a local individual operating under the UPS banner, so it's not necessarily UPS doing business with the Klan. Yeah, but they're doing business with the Klan in the name of UPS. Permissive use. Licensed use. Franchised use. Steve in New York suggests criminal conspiracy to use the mails to terrorize black folks. Well, it wasn't so much the mails. They just left these bags of rice with their filthy little Klan flyers on people's porches. At least that's what the photograph said. People in Milton this morning found these on their porches. Tell you one damn sure way to make sure that the Klan gets to terrorize people. Remain silent. Do nothing. Yeah. That's a guarantee. Garen Dam T. Well, I didn't mean to overfill a bobster, but I have. It's 22 minutes past the hour. Again, not kidding. We try to raise $200 every evening in any combination. Remember, thanks to the secret open carry Happy Trails Roundup Society, all loose change amounts get rounded up to the next dollar. No challenges or anything on the table this evening. And we're actually, you know, we're caught up for the time being. And so we can do the fundraising for this evening and finish the week in good stead. We're going to have a problem. Okay. We're having a little problem here. Let's try this again. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Of course, you could always write to simply the UPS store, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, Beckley, West Virginia, 25801, and say, why are you doing business with the Klan? See, the Klan has to operate in the dark, in secret, in the shadows. If they were actually proud of what they did, you know, it'd be on, you know, Fred Wright. They're not a business like we are. Jack says, I don't get what bags of rice signify. White, like white on rice, or the white race, because the photo says to save the white race. Jim says, UPS grants franchise holders complete autonomy. I have checked. Autonomy, schmautonomy. They're franchisees and they are operating in the name of the United Parcel Service. UPS is still on the hook. No, you can't look up that address. Michael says, couldn't you look up that address at your county seat? You could tell who owns it. No. It's just a post office box at a UPS store. That's all. So let's take a break and fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable that is the Horn Molloy Skype chat group and Friday on the Front Porch. If you've always wanted to participate but never have, all you have to do is send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk and include a message saying, I want to be in Friday on the Front Porch, or FOTFP or something like that. And he'll throw out the breadcrumb trail, and you'll be part of the conversation before you even know it. Exactly. As Barbie points out, they are agents of the United Parcel Service. Ron asks, how would West Virginia's Religious Freedom Bill affect this situation? Well, if it had passed, I guess you could discriminate against them. You could say my religion, the owner could say the business could say my religion forbids me to do business with murdering white supremacist assholes. But the religious bigotry bill was killed in the Senate. So again, we'll take a little break and come back. Still haven't sorted out the issue with the gizmo box, but it seems to be working generally better audio-wise, just point to point. If you want to get on the air that way, the number is 304-663-HORN, 304-663-4676. That's the stress line, named in memory of the gone but not forgotten, inimitable Bill Mr. Stress Miller. All right, break time. This is The Horn. We'll be back. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Gather round me, people, a story I will tell about the murder of a child by the name of Emmett Till. A stain of blood remains on the soul of this nation as long as murderers walk free and the law is forsaken. All across this land is no justice still for the murder of the innocent child named Emmett Till. Down in Mississippi, where the magnolia smells sweet, still remains a stench of murder, injustice, and deceit. In the little town, news traveled fast, and when the two men heard, they decided to hunt down and kill the mockingbird. The women folk down there, they all know the facts. When the white men come to get you, you ain't never
coming back. All across this land, there is no justice still for the murder of the innocent child named Emmett Till. Emmett's mother asked that his casket not be shut, so all the world could see how savage were his cuts. His killers still walk free on streets that can be seen. After boasting of their deeds in a famous magazine, all the judge could say to save his corrupted face was that Emmett was a black boy that didn't know his place. All across this land, there is no justice still for the murder of the innocent child named Emmett Till. His killers were acquitted by a jury of their peers. What was sitting in that box, we all had better fear. Emmett's death was lonesome. Two men did the crime, but the injustice that remains is now all yours and mine. All across this land, there is no justice still for the murder of the innocent child named Emmett Till.
I thought that more than a little bit appropriate. John Koontz, K-O-O-N-C-E, John Koontz. And the song is simply called Emmett Till, from an album from a few years back, 2007, called It Can Never Happen Here. It is 7:32, 28 minutes before the hour, hour and 28 minutes left in the program this evening. Good idea coming from Stockton Larry in the chat room. To also the Teamsters, Bob. Yeah, UPS is a union shop. And the Teamsters should probably be made aware that their drivers are delivering for the Klan. Theoretically. Yeah. Stockton Larry also says, does the union contract have work rules that could prohibit those deliveries? That is certainly worth the inquiry. All right, let's run over to the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Good evening, Sparky. Wrong button. Good evening, Sparky.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now. It was not your fault. It was mine. Wrong button.
I know. You throw the wrong switch all the time.
You have no idea how many of those there are.
I can imagine.
There's, I mean,
probably
there's
a lot.
Let's see, 20. There's 21 of them. So I've got a 2 in 21 chance. Okay, so that's 1 in 10. So all right, now I'm an idiot.
Well, I thank you for taking one for the team and watching the debate last night, because I turned it on. I lasted about 30 seconds.
I just sat. I mean, it's to say every time I say I'm not gonna, and then I do. And I just sat here with my mouth hanging open, going, "Really? Welcome to Merca. Hell yeah. Water, like from the toilet."
So wait. I can't believe this. So I'm just gonna ask, and then I don't want to hear ever mention this again. Are you really saying that the man ate a booger on TV? Please tell me y'all were joking.
No, ma'am.
Because
It is real.
There's a video been going all around the internet all day.
Oh God.
And there's the regular resolution, and then somebody decided to get creative and actually created a close up. It's a little grainy. You can see some resolution lines, but man, it's there. It's like a little animal sitting on his upper lip, and then it crawls down to his lower lip, and then and then.
Okay, that's enough.
I wonder if he'd had dinner before the debate, Bob.
Of course, because that was dessert.
Oh, geez. Disgusting.
You better get your 2 cents worth in now, Rick, if you got a 5 o'clock conference call.
Yeah, well, I got to work on a complaint, too, so I'm not going to have much time here. So, I tell you, I'm amazed at the state of the race, the GOP debate. Bob, did the Klan actually steal your mail, you think? Have they been going through it?
Who knows now? I mean, who knows?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I was talking the other day about every now and then the boss man Wayne gets an envelope that's been opened.
It's weird.
In the case of Jennifer's note from Australia, it was a pair of snapshots, but somebody was looking for money.
Yes, of course, or drugs.
Yeah, we're not known for receiving drugs, but we do get the occasion. You know, once in a while, he reaches into the echo chamber, and there's a check there,
right?
And cash has been known to happen.
Okay.
I used to send cash there before I went to PayPal.
Right. Yeah, it would always come with a note that said union dues.
Yeah. I'm sure Boss Man Wayne knows the local UPS, Teamsters guy.
I'm pretty sure he does.
Those guys are Teamsters, the UPS delivery guys?
Oh, yes, they are.
Yeah, but the independent operators of the UPS stores wouldn't be Teamsters members, would they?
No.
Not necessarily, just the drivers.
Yeah.
Because they're not employees of UPS.
And right? Boss Man Wayne knows the guy because of the building trades. Here, all the concrete truck drivers are Teamsters. So they're part of the building trades council.
Yeah, you know, Rick Smith's a Teamster.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
One of my favorite stories that he tells is the young woman who came, he was wearing his purple satin Teamsters jacket, really neat looking thing, and it's got the Teamsters logo with the horses on the back.
Oh, their logo is great.
Yeah, so this young woman walks up to him and goes, do you work with horses?
Frau Brucker.
I've got a union jacket with the IBEW local logo on it.
Oh, Boss Man Wayne's got it. Boss Man Wayne's got
it. With the fist and all the lightning bolts coming out of it. So
yeah, Boss Man Wayne's got the same thing in a you know, top of the line Carhartt with a great big carpenter's patch on the back.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I was still reeling over Zoe Saldana, and then I listened to you guys. I'm like, okay, can this day get any better?
I don't know Zoe Saldana.
Well, Zoe Saldana, do you even know who she is?
Yes. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
She's beautiful. She's, you know, pretty good actress, but they picked her to play Nina Simone. And so she's basically playing her in blackface.
Well, I mean, isn't Zoe Saldana a woman of color?
Yeah, but she's nowhere near the color of Nina Simone. And the fact And she had to wear a nose piece to get the nose. Okay, so anybody that knows who Nina Simone is.
Absolutely.
You know, civil rights activist, you know, just was get through hell, especially because of how dark she was. And
Mississippi
how
Goddamn, yeah.
Mississippi Goddamn, to be young, gifted, and black. Unapologetically black. And while Zoe Saldana is a sister of color, she is, first of all, she doesn't claim to be black. because, you know, I see no color. She's one of those, I see no color. And the fact of the matter is, just because she had to go, like, seriously, like, three shades blacker than she is. I mean, she looks like, if you Google her as Nina Simone, you would be troubled. You would be like, okay, so there was no dark-skinned sisters, actresses ever that could have played Nina Simone. On top of the fact that it was Nina Simone in her older days, you know, when she, right before she passed, and when she was at her worst. So she was in her 30s, 40s, or what have you. I don't know. I don't know Viola Davis. Let's see, who else? Aubrey Woodard. There's a whole list of sisters that could have played Nina Simone that would not have had to, you know, burn cork and put on shoe polish in order to play her. It's just, it's a travesty. It's just right there showing how you do not understand, you know, when somebody's like, well, and yeah, the actress had to play, she had to put on black makeup too. And I'm like, but she's in blackface. And it, you got, I need one of you guys to Google it, the picture, and put it up there so you can see just how it's horrible. And I could go on and on. And then I hear that, and I'm all over this. And then I see, you know, you tell me about people eating boogers on television, and these people want to be our next president. The day just keeps getting better and better and better. Yeah, no.
Well, at least you've got access to good liquor.
Yeah, and I'm going to Vegas this next weekend, so I'll be probably.
Come on, 7. Come on, 11. Mama needs a new pair of shoes.
Mama needs a new. Oh God, now does Mama need a new pair of shoes? We got the move-in date for the house on May 1st.
Yeah. Oh wow. Awesome.
Yeah.
You do want to be in Vegas this weekend, that's for sure.
What's this weekend?
NASCAR weekend.
Oh, God.
No.
No. Oh, no, it's next weekend. Is there any white trash thing going
on? I mean, that's like going to CPAC. and you did hear that Donald Trump dumped CPAC, didn't you?
No. He did. Oh. Well,
he just couldn't fit it into his busy schedule, I think.
I don't know, Bob. I mean, I don't know. I'm just, the last few days, I mean, other than the whole Ben Carson dropping out, and what was I going on and on about the other day on my Facebook page? We were going back and forth about, because there's just so much that I forget.
I understand. So,
I was on a tear the other day, and I was also I'm feeling very well because I'm getting over some crazy stomach flu thing or another, but I'm really perplexed with what's happening in this country lately. I just, between Marco Rubio and now Ralph Alito, what do you call him? Ralph Alito, the future anointed king, now booger.
Ralph Alito, the anointed booger eaten future king of America.
Has he replied about him eating boogers on national television?
No, because the media do have standards.
Okay.
While they'll fawn over, everything that Trump says, and Tamron Hall over at MSNBC will leave him a voicemail asking if she can use his discount at Gucci. Because that happened.
What? No.
Wow.
Yeah, Gawker got hold. Gawker got I saw this in an exchange on Twitter with Isaac and Sandra. Gawker got hold of some telephone voicemail messages, and lo and behold, one of them is Tamron Hall. From a couple of years back, asking pretty please, can she use his Gucci discount because there's this $3,000 dress that she wants.
Okay. Well, that's... Wow.
And then there's another tape of Joe and Mika leaving a voice message for him. Hi, Donald. It's Mika and Joe calling. Say hi, Joe. Hey there, Donald. How you doing? We're just leaving you a message because we're trying to get in touch with you, but you must be, like, on your jet or something. We'd love to talk to you, so call one of us. What's your other number, Joe? And Joe gives a number and says, and the kids want to scream, thank you to you, Donald. Say, thank you, Donald. And the children scream, thank you. And Joe says, we are so, so grateful for everything, Donald. And we just wanted to call you and tell you how much it means to us. And Mika says, it was amazing. Thank you, Donald. Hope to talk to you soon. Bye.
Leave me alone. I don't need this. I don't have to put. I don't have to tolerate this nonsense. What?
And of course, they immediately had a hissy, and Joe tweeted out, "Oh my God! I just read the transcripts. Trump must have contributed to a children's charity. Scandalous." Should Mika and I now apologize for raising money for children's charities from rich people?
Yeah, because Donald Trump eats his young. These people. Oh, now I remember what I was going on all about. Lindsey Graham dissing. The Lindsey Graham interview on Super Tuesday. That was so awesome. That was the best thing I have seen all day. I woke up to that on Wednesday morning. No, actually, I heard him going off about it because, you know, we don't get it until late at night. And then I had to keep rewinding it over and over again just to hear him say it again about Hillary's going to beat him like a drum. It was just the most awesome thing ever.
Yeah, but see, here's the problem. Here's the problem, Tracy. That was fun to listen to. But Lindsey has not exactly got the best track record in the world of predicting things. He said Donald was just a clown and be out of it.
Yes.
Yeah, Hillary is not going to beat Donald like a drum.
No, it's going to, no. Now,
Bernie might.
Bernie would. Because like you were saying the other day, so the fuck what? She won states that Democrats wouldn't win anyway. So, Jan forgets how caustic and nasty I can be. And so we were talking, she's like, well, look, Hillary won this. I said, and me being me, I say, so of course she wants Southern states, sweetie, like they're going to vote for a Jew down south. Come on.
Oh, and by the way, just a couple more from the Trump voicemails. Tom Brady, Patriots quarterback, says,
cheater.
Donald, it's your favorite quarterback. And then in the next voice message, he says, hey, big guy, it's your favorite NFL quarterback calling. So when they reached out to his agent, Don Yee said, Tom Brady does not recall ever making any telephone calls to Donald Trump. Well, here, let me play the recording for you. Hi, Donald, it's your favorite NFL quarterback calling. People have, I mean, you know, that to a certain extent, he's told the truth. He says, people come to me all the time for money. And you know what? They do. They abase themselves. They debase themselves. They fall all over themselves. You know, I'm proud to say I've never begged Donald Trump for any fucking money.
Can you say the same thing about George Soros, though, Bob?
Yes, I can, because I've never begged him for money either. I've just pointed out that, you know, he's supposed to be the funder of all things liberal, and somehow or another we've never gotten the check.
Yeah.
But I do need to put something out there. Brother Deacon Asa says, this is too much of a historic day not to commemorate it as such. I hereby would like to announce a $50 booger-eaten table on the challenge. And I would also like to let the Hornedanistas know that booger-eaten, anointed king of America, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, has found supporters in strange places. I need to find a place to throw up.
Is it possible to couple that challenge with a little bit of food porn, Bob? Or should
well,
we
wait, 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 wait. The odd place where Ted Cruz has found a friend. This is from Cosmopolitan.com. A magazine that Kurt Vonnegut once described as having once featured excellent short fiction, but had since become a shockingly frank, his words, a shockingly frank sex manual. Headline, "Can You Not Please? Caitlyn Jenner Likes Ted Cruz, Says She's Ready to Be His Trans Ambassador."
I want a pen. Can I...
Did we hurt you, Tracy?
No.
Which reminds me, I tweeted out a photo, a query actually, of Carol Baker last night, and I asked her if the photo was taken anywhere near the Ballerina Swan Lake Trailer Court and Mobile Home Park Park Country Club, because you could see some trailers in the background and a sign that said Liberty, L-I-B-E-T-Y, not Tranny, T-R-A-N-N-Y. No, really. Y'all still there?
I am.
I think I just made everybody else faint.
No, I'm here. I'm just waiting for the food porn section to follow up on the boogers.
Oh, okay. Yeah, then go ahead, Rick.
I'm here.
Where are those smelling salts?
I know. Or at least a little bourbon to huff.
There you go. No, actually, we'll probably stay away from the food porn after the boogers. But I have to say, I didn't actually see that. I was watching on the computer, so the resolution wasn't as good, but I guess if I had a high definition picture, I'd have been able to see it.
I checked in with Carol Baker, Queen of the Minions, and she said, "Oh yeah, I saw it as it happened."
Oh my God, is he really going to do that? He's going to lick it? Oh God! I mean,
I proudly introduced the world to a new Appalachianism because I said he LARPed the booger. That's LARP,
Oh jeez.
Just like, he was so hungry he LARPed his biscuits and sorghums right up.
Oh God.
Yeah, so yes, LARPed. He didn't just eat, he LARPed.
I didn't know that was a new word, Bob.
Well, it isn't for you and me. It's a very old word, in fact, Ron.
I'm just saying, Zal.
Yeah, I got you. I understand.
What's sorghums? Molasses.
Yeah, it's molasses that's made out of sorghum grass as opposed to sugarcane. Sorghum will grow in temperate climates, like West Virginia. And you grind it just like you grind sugarcane, and you boil the sap, and you boil the juice, and you get sorghum molasses.
But nowadays, it's used mostly for silage.
True.
Looks a lot like really short corn when you're driving by the fields.
Yeah.
And green, no ears.
And when they tassel up, it can kind of resemble cattails in a way, can't it?
Yep.
Because the tassels turn brown.
Is silage cattle feed for cattle feed, or what is that?
Yeah, you put it up and you chop it up and pump it up take it up by an elevator to the top of the big silos. And the heat and pressure make it ferment.
Oh, okay.
And you take it out at the bottom with an auger, and you feed it as food to your dairy cows in the wintertime.
Oh, okay.
And in
much the same way, if you've ever seen the giant plastic-wrapped bales of hay out here on the West Coast, it's a way of making silage and getting that fermentation in the hay product without having to put it in a silo.
So does it make the cattle drunk then, or what, since it ferments when they consume it?
I don't think it makes them drunk. It's an extra source of sugar. It helps them create fat through the winter.
Okay.
And it you know, because of the way their digestive tract is developed, it probably is a digestive aid to ferment it on the front end.
Okay.
And part of that fermentation process does break down the fiber that if they're just eating regular dried hay, they get more nutrients out because a lot of the cellulose is broken down into things that the cows can digest. So it's more efficient to wrap it in the plastic or put it in the silo than it is to just feed regular dried baled hay.
Hmm. And it smells much like I would imagine Marco's ass does.
Jeez. Or Ted's boogers.
No!
It's not true.
Ooh! He shoots, he scores.
That's got to be a huge Twitter thing. Ted the Booger Eater or something like that. Rafael Eduardo Cruz, King of the Booger King.
I don't know. Maybe there's a hashtag out there, Booger Cruz.
There you go. Anointed Booger King. Cruz.
Isn't it going to be hard to for him to put any kind of varnish on that? It's got to be like polishing a turd.
But I got to thinking about that. I think in the current climate. Wait a minute.
You having a snack again, Bob?
No, he's sneezing. I'm sneezing.
No, that didn't happen. In the current climate, they will ignore it because, see, the whole game here now, you know, the reason Rubio and Cruz and Kasich, you know, even Kasich, are staying in. And the reason for that question last night about, well, I mean, isn't your path to the nomination rather narrow? The reason they're staying in is, as I understand it, the rules of the Republican Party are that the nominee must have 50% plus 0.00001, you know, a majority, a bare slim majority, in order to become the nominee. So the game here is to keep Donald Trump from crossing the 50% line. And the thinking is that as long as Cruz and Rubio and Kasich are still in it, that they can each siphon away just enough votes to keep him from entering the convention at 50%, because after the first ballot, all the delegates are released.
Okay.
And then you get a floor fight, at which point the Mormon prophecy of the white horse that we have previously discussed kicks in, and Bishop Willard Romney in his magic underwear come riding into the convention center in Cleveland on a white horse saying, "Here I come to save the day. Willard Romney's on the way." And the Republican Party goes, "Yeah, we hated his guts and he's a two-time loser, but he ain't Trump."
Jeez.
You know, I'm not a big fan of Kasich, but in that scenario, I wouldn't rule him out.
Well, and that's what he's playing, Ron. He's gonna be the one that's, you know, I mean, there was that moment where he said, and you know, I knew, you know, I was there with Ronald Reagan. I knew Ronald Reagan. I gave Ronald Reagan a hand job.
Yeah, but who has the best billionaire alignment or team to go up against Trump?
Well, that's hard to say. I mean, you don't know where Sheldon Adelson is, but within the last week, Chuck and Dave, you know, the Koch boys, have announced that they will not spend money on a Stop Trump campaign.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So they made a deal with Trump already.
Yeah, one might say that.
Yeah, but don't count out Jeb Bush yet.
Well, true, Roger. He's still got a shit ton of money, doesn't he?
To the best of my knowledge, he still has all kinds of money, and he could be in riding in on the white horse.
But see, Willard R. Money is the one who stepped up and drew the withering fire. So that means he stepped into the breach. He earned it.
Bob, are you talking about mint raw money, or who are we talking about?
Yes, Bishop Willard, Bishop Willard R. Money.
Okay, there you go. Yeah, Norman made up the phrase that mint raw money to refer to Romney during the last election cycle. I sort of took a liking to that moniker, but that's okay. I like yours as well, you know.
Our money is just a different spelling of Romney.
There you go. That's right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Personally, I'd love to see Trump get bumped out at the convention. He could scream to high heaven, run an independent campaign, split the Republican vote, and whatever dregs we've got left in the Democratic side will win going away.
Yeah, sort of like Wilson did.
Yeah, and that's what I expect, because he stood there on the stage last night and said, yeah, I'll support the Republican candidate. But the thing is, this is part of that that I could shoot a person in the middle of Fifth Avenue and never lose a vote. He knows, and it's true. He knows that if he says, screw all of these bought and paid for Republicans, I'm running an independent candidacy for president for you. He knows that the people who are voting for him are going to stay with him.
Yeah, but on the other side of that same scale, Lindsey Graham is saying that if somebody shot Cruz in the Senate and the trial was held there, they'd never be convicted.
Right, because, apparently the Republican majority in the Senate still adheres to that old Southern maxim that the son of a bitch had it coming to him is an affirmative defense.
Yeah. Gotta love the South there, Bob.
Sure do. Yeehaw.
I'm still trying to figure out how Hillary's making so many points over the fact that she won a whole bunch of red states where there's no way in God's green earth a Democrat's going to win in November.
I have an answer to that, because if you look at the 2008 and the 1992 maps, the Democratic nominee swept the South, or nearly swept the South, and went on to win the presidency. Whereas if you look at the Mondale and Dukakis primary maps, they don't, and they don't. So, to someone just looking at naked statistics, it looks like there's a correlation there.
I like my statistics naked.
But when the Democrat won the White House, did they win the states that they won in the primary? That's the real key.
No, they didn't. No, they didn't.
Winning the presidency really doesn't mean squat. But when you get Hillary Clinton winning South Carolina, there's no way in hell that when South Carolina votes in November, that Hillary Clinton's going to be the person elected from South Carolina.
No, hell no.
For the Electoral College.
Or Alabama, or Tennessee, or Georgia, or Arkansas, or Louisiana, or Mississippi, and you know what? Let's be fair on the other end of that spectrum. If Bernie's the nominee, there's no way in hell he's going to carry Oklahoma.
I'm not going to argue that.
Well, if Trump's
only 13% of the people of the United States have voted yet, we've still got 87% of the people that haven't even made a preference known via ballot. So why are these pundits calling it over?
Because Hillary has to be inevitable. But whether you are, because reality spoken here, whether you are a Hillary supporter or a Bernie supporter, there's trouble in River City. Because turnout is way the hell down from what it was in 2008.
And just maybe the turnout's down because there's a whole lot of Democrats that really don't give a shit whether it's Bernie or Hillary. They're going to vote for him anyhow, and they don't care who the Democratic nominee is. They're going to vote for the Democratic nominee. So why the hell should I go vote?
That's a viable theory. The only problem with that being, though, Roger, is that, they got to go vote in November.
I can't help wondering if there's an excitement gap. I mean, there's tremendous excitement at Bernie's rallies. You see a Hillary rally, and it's like people are sitting in the chairs fanning themselves with funeral home fans, like they never mind.
On their scooters, right, Bob?
Well, I wasn't going to go there, but you get the idea. Yeah. Oh, by the way, breaking news. Ray just wrote in. It's official. Ben Carson has pulled out.
Was he ever in?
Well, yeah. I mean, he was in it to win it.
Yeah. I think it was a glorified book tour myself. You know, I think once he got into the low single digits, he couldn't justify being out there anymore because everybody knew it was just a book tour by then, you know?
Oh, and by the way, in Shreveport, writing from Shreveport, Jack reminds us, or lets us know, Trump had a rally in New Orleans today. There were 28 protesters removed. To me, that's a good number. I just hope they didn't get the shit beaten out of them.
There was a whole shitload of people across the street from the debate last night in Detroit. In the cold.
Well, it's not like they expected the Republicans to pretend they gave a shit about them, is it? Oh, and hey, Jenny. Jenny usually doesn't get in until late. I want to make sure. Hey, Jenny.
Hello.
How are you? You're here early. I want to make sure you get a shot at the conversation.
Oh, I don't really have anything to say yet. I just thought of something a bit earlier, but I don't remember what it was.
Okay. Just checking.
I know what I wanted to add.
Okay, so how many of the caucuses and primaries were open? I mean, I know I've done that in the past here in Wisconsin. Like, I voted, like, for a Republican that I really didn't like just to try to kick him out. Which is kind of bad to do, but you know what I mean? So how many people, you know, like the Democratic, you know, turnout might be low, but maybe a bunch of Democrats voted for Donald Trump just to try to, I don't know. It's kind of pulling.
I'm sure that data's out there. It's just a matter of, I don't know the answer.
Yeah, I don't know. That's what I'm hoping for anyway.
I got one thing, Bob.
Yeah.
The town hall next week on Fox, Bernie's showing up and Hillary's not?
Yeah.
What do you think will be made out of that?
Yeah, well, Bernie's got nothing to lose. Hillary has everything to lose. Can you imagine that poor woman in amongst those vultures? They tear her to pieces. I mean, because
she's never been in the den, has she?
Well, I mean, she was when she was sitting there in front of Trey Gowdy for 11 freaking hours. I mean, she could hold her own, I have no doubt, but it serves no purpose to go in there and squabble with a booger eater. On the other hand, Bernie looks heroic and brave.
Yeah, he's gone on with Chris, the Fox Sunday show lots of times.
And so, you know, I don't know. I guess the booger eater and the guy who wants us all to move to Sweden and the guy who thinks that people only believe that there's, you know, the rich are getting richer and Drumpf, will they take pot shots at him? Yeah, sure. It'll be interesting. I mean, it's kind of like if four out of the five super friends were evil.
Yeah, but it's going to be a town hall, so there'll be an audience there.
Yeah.
So that'll be interesting to watch.
Oh, and just had a note coming from Dogman in the chat room.
saying exactly what I said about turnout. There's no enthusiasm for Hillary compared to Bernie. Our turnout is lowering as the GOP's is rising. In addition, the fascist is pulling fence sitters from the Dems. And, you know, people who have any authoritarian tendencies can be turned. And there are authoritarians inside the Democratic Party. Because those are the same people who say, well, you know, we've got to be realistic. We can't be letting people go to college for free. I mean, we got to be pragmatic. We got to be pragmatic progressives. We can't let people earn 3/4 of the minimum wage from 1960. $12 is fine for those people. So, it's a thing. Hey, Roger, I saw some pictures of you swanning around with some political bigwigs. You were at the California convention?
Yeah, I was at the convention in San Jose last weekend and listening to Friday on the Front Porch as I was sitting in a room talking about trying to make reforms about particularly juvenile prison sentences. We apparently have a young man here in California that got sentenced to 300 years. He was under 18, been sentenced to 300 years because he was standing next to somebody who shot somebody in a robbery. And there's a lot of work being done to try and change a whole lot of these ungodly prison sentences for minors that become life in prison without the possibility of parole because of juvenile indiscretions is a good way to put it.
So did they hang felony murder on that kid?
I don't know what they held on it, but he got 300 years. You know, I mean, you're sentencing a 16, 17-year-old kid to die in prison. And there's efforts to do away with that. But anyway, that's why I didn't get in, is because I was just listening while I was in this hearing. The convention was a little bit interesting in many ways. One of them is I never, ever, 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 ever want to go to anywhere where a sitting vice president comes to talk. The security is worse than going through an airport, and it's just absolute nutcase. Joe Biden came, talked to us for about 45 minutes and talked about how great things are happening and how the first time he and Obama walked into the Oval Office, they kind of wished that the inauguration was in March and not in January, because March, everybody in the country would have realized how bad things were. And somebody yelled at him that he should run for president, and he shined him on. And he's really pushing his cancer number. Another big thing was that when you have two Democrats running for the Senate in the primary here, like we have with Loretta Sanchez and Kamala Harris, the delegates are polled as to whether or not they make a recommendation. And the normal thing is no recommendation. It takes a 2/3 majority. And on the rare occasions that an endorsement is made, it's usually 68-69. Kamala Harris got a 78% backing for her to run for the Senate. The other thing is that the Bernie supporters were really out in force, and the Hillary people just kind of, there were a few buttons around for Hillary, but the Progressive Democrats of America and the Nurses Association and various other groups were all pushing Bernie Sanders, and the vast majority of the delegates were Bernie supporters. And these are 2,000 of the most active Democrats in the state.
I take it you're hoping that bodes well.
Well, yeah, I'm hoping it bodes well. I put some money in a jar and brought home a bunch of Bernie buttons and brought them back up here to Humboldt County. And anytime somebody, oh, wow, you're for Bernie, man, you got any? I always have at least 2 or 3 buttons on me. You got a button? Yeah, here's one. And I'm just giving them out. And that's my contributions to Bernie's campaign. Oh, I mean, I've done money too, but I'm passing out Bernie stickers, and I've even got some bumper stickers. And if anybody says, "Man, you got any way to get me a bumper sticker?" I'll just go out in my car and get one and say, "Now you got to promise to put it on."
Right.
But I'm pushing Bernie all the way.
Well, and I'm still there, too. But, there, you know, there's a larger question that I've been pondering for a week or so. Well, basically ever since South Carolina. And it was brought up earlier, Roger. You know, the one thing that progressives in California may have in common with progressives in West Virginia is that neither of us get to vote until most progressive or most primary processes are a done deal. I mean, and that needs to be remedied.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to try to argue with you on that point, but it has a lot to do with media. If you pull out this pledged super delegates from what the media is saying, the media is adding all the super delegates into Hillary's count. You pull them out, Bernie's only about 120 delegates behind. And only 13% of the delegates have been elected so far. I mean, this is absolute garbage. New York, California, Illinois, those are the big population states. There's so many delegates yet to be decided. And super delegates, they could say, I mean, some super delegate Senate person right now could say, well, in 2020, I'm going to be for Joe Biden to run for president. So I'm pledged to Joe Biden. They can change their mind right up to the last day.
Sure they can.
They may say they're pledged, but that's not money in the bank. And a lot of the superdelegates, they were looking at Hillary being a shoo-in. And they were pushing for the assistant secretary to the assistant secretary of commerce or, you know, some damn thing. They were getting on Hillary's bandwagon because she was going to be the president. So they wanted to be an early supporter so that they had a shot at an appointment if they lost their seat. When they get into that convention and their state went for Bernie or was basically tied for Bernie, they just might make a little bit different decision, like Alan Grayson did his poll on who he should support as a superdelegate. Even though he said he's going to vote for Bernie, he's not committed to that till the first ballot. After the first ballot, well, he's not committed at all. Whereas I'm not a delegate that got elected to go to the convention as a Bernie delegate, I'm obliged to vote for Bernie on the first ballot. But after the first ballot, it's a free-for-all.
Yes, absolutely. No doubt about it.
In both parties.
Okay, I have a question. So is there a place, I guess I never really thought about looking it up, but can, like, Wisconsin superdelegates from Wisconsin, that each state has their own superdelegates?
Oh, yeah. Your superdelegates are your members of Congress, your governor, your senators. Political mucky-mucks.
So I can find out who the superdelegates are in Wisconsin. I can see if they're supporting Hillary, and then I can contact them and try to persuade them to change their vote.
Yeah.
Okay. In the Democratic Party, virtually every elected officer at a statewide level who is of that party is a superdelegate.
Yeah, and the superdelegate phenomenon doesn't exist in the Republican Party.
But, I mean, like the Secretary of State of California is and the insurance commissioner are Democrats. So they become superdelegates because they hold a statewide office in California. Governor, lieutenant governor, insurance commissioner,
right,
attorney general, secretary of state,
auditor,
et cetera, et cetera. Auditor, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And you just have to look up who they are and go to their website and see if they're for Hillary or for Bernie.
Does that apply just to elected? Roger, does that apply just to elected public officials of the party or appointed as well?
Elected.
Okay. Thanks.
Now, the elected chair of the California Democratic Party is not a superdelegate, because that is a party statewide office, not a state statewide office. Now, I'm
So if you're the local, if you're the local county circuit judge, you're not a superdelegate.
No, no.
But if now, you're a judge of the state Supreme Court.
I don't know whether Supreme Court justices are superdelegates or not. I don't know that.
Well, I mean, do y'all elect your, do you elect yours, or do you appoint them?
They're appointed, and then they are, they go through an election process to be finally confirmed. And it's like every 6 years or something, they have to go through an election. And Sparky, you might remember this, the Rose Byrd Court, where they threw the death penalty out. The next election around, there was a huge campaign to de-elect them. I mean, in other words, the ballot says, shall John Doe remain on the Supreme Court for another 6 years?
Mm-hmm.
And most of them get voted yes. But
is it done on a partisan basis, Democrat, Republican?
No.
No.
There are no.
Then they're probably not superdelegates.
Yeah. I would agree with that. Anyhow, I just wanted to jump in, get that out. The wife told me she's not cooking, so I got to go deal with the pizza parlor order and all the rest of that stuff. But
pizza.
Just wanted to give you a little report. Now, the one interesting thing that happened at the convention is across the street there was a party-type venue, and they had a rave that went on Friday and Saturday night. And I've never been to a rave in my life. Never knew what they were. I've read about them. And the guys that go dressed to a rave in San Jose are dressed kind of normal high school grungy, you know, low pants and wife beater shirts and, you know, that kind of crap. But my God, the girls that go there, I think I saw more skin across the street from the San Jose Convention Center than I saw in Ipanema Beach when I was down in Rio de Janeiro.
Good.
I mean, these girls from about 16 to 19, they're absolutely nothing. Now, not all of them, but some of them left absolutely nothing to the imagination. I mean, we're talking thong underwear and pasties on some of them.
Oh, geez. Well,
believe it. And this is February, and they're standing on the streets of San Jose waiting to get into the venue. It was kind of amazing.
Well, I guess you sweat a lot in those sorts of things, so you might as well dress, like, down, let's just say.
Well, they were definitely dressed down.
I hope you dressed down. Dressing up would not be appropriate.
Yeah. Yeah, well, yeah, speaking of that, I loved T-Rump's comment about the linkage between his small hands and another part of his body. But I must say that he did bust, he busted Marco pretty good on that one, because I know Marco had been talking, you know, in the week preceding about, you know what they say about people with small hands.
I was just waiting for them to compare shoe size.
Mm-hmm.
I can't believe that a Republican debate comes down to some guy talking about the size of his dick and somebody else eating a booger.
And that is so crazy, isn't it?
Come on. When Hillary and Bernie do something, they're talking issues.
Oh, I know. That's why it's such a joke, the Republican debate. But I remember, like, in junior high school, we would, you know, there was the old, you know, mine's bigger joke, and we'd, like, take our belts off, and then we'd hold our belts up and see whose was longer, you know, that kind of thing. But it's almost like that. It's so infantile and puerile, you know?
Well, I'm waiting for some researcher to go around and find, well, ex-wives, ex-girlfriends, whatever, of T-Rump, and start asking them questions about what they consider his size to be.
Well, it's kind of already out there. I had a tweet from Sandra yesterday, I think, of some 1991 penthouse pet who said, "Oh, I slept with Donald and he was amazing in bed." This, you know, it's kind of like a rewrite of the motto from the X-Files. You know, the shit is out there.
Yeah. And Bill Clinton gets a blowjob, yeah, and we hear about it for 20 years, and this asshole stands on a stage at a national audience and says, "My dick is as big as my hands, and fuck you."
Yeah, yeah. But see, one flows from the other, Roger.
It's professional wrestling all over again with him.
Yeah, right.
I just wanted to tell you, I did a Wikipedia search on superdelegates, and then I found my own superdelegates, and I'm going to write them letters. We have 8 of them in Wisconsin.
Well, I think the thing to do is to ask him to vote the way the people vote in Wisconsin.
Yeah, because I think the people are, I mean, I think the people are going to go Bernie in Wisconsin big time. That's my thought. Like from
but my thoughts are, if the people go Bernie, they should vote Bernie. If the people go Hillary, they should go Hillary.
Yeah, I know. We've had 3 of them. 3 of them were committed. 3 of them are women, and they're all going Clinton.
Okay. Well, but again, let me remind you that that committed is only until the vote starts being taken, and they can change their mind at all. But the elected delegates are bound to vote in the first round of voting as the people who voted in your state.
The superdelegates thing is an optics PR thing. It's not a real measurement. It's something because it and I guess we just have short memories. But 8 years ago this time, the Hillary camp was crowing, "Oh, Hillary's got all the superdelegates." Well, how'd that work out?
Well, but also the superdelegates are just a way for all the elected officials to feel important when they go to the convention. But what they do, they're going to be looking at it as opposed to their reelection in the next, well, a lot of these are House members. And if the people of the state went for Bernie, but they've pledged to Hillary, maybe they're going to think about, hey, my congressional district went 65 for Bernie and 35 for Hillary, or, you know, whatever the break was. And if I go against the wishes of my congressional district, it may not look too good for me in November when I'm running for reelection. So even though they've pledged at this time, there's a tremendous amount of movement of superdelegates before that first vote.
Yeah,
Thank you.
And that's why I say that making that argument is just bullshit at this point. You know, and any media outlet that includes that in some sort of real number has sort of outed itself for what it is.
I don't have it off the top of my head, but there is a website out there that is counting the delegates that have been elected and comparing Bernie and Hillary between them and leaving out the superdelegate numbers, just totally leaving them out. And I think Bernie's like 130 delegates behind, and it takes well over 2,000. I mean, both of them are under 300, but it takes 2,000 delegates to get nominated. So we are so early in the process that to try and write anybody in or out is bonzo.
Well, you know, the media is trying to, you know, crown Hillary is basically what they're trying to do. That's why they, you know, jack up the totals to include the superdelegates. But you're right, Roger. I mean, you know, the numbers of delegates aren't that far apart. I've actually seen it more like being a spread of about 190 of actual earned delegates. But, I mean, different media outlets have different ways of counting it. And this is without including superdelegates.
Well, the number I saw, I think, was like 170, 190
okay.
split. Difference between them.
Yeah, yeah. And in the Republican primary, the split is, I mean, Donald's only ahead by about 100 delegates. Then again, they only need half as many delegates, roughly, to get the nomination. It's like 1,200 and something for them. So,
well, but in that case, what you need to do is take Donald and you need to take everybody else and add them together.
Yeah. Well, that's what the media has tried to do. But I mean, he does have a point that you can't really do that because, you know, that would only work in a one-on-one kind of a race, you know?
No. On the first ballot.
Trump doesn't have
50% plus one vote.
Right.
Everybody's released.
Right.
So you can do that on the Republican side. On the Democratic side, it's a two-person race. Although, didn't O'Malley get two or three delegates?
I don't know.
Hard to say.
He was in Iowa. He would have. Well, he might have gotten some in Iowa. I don't know. He could have.
Now, the other side of it is that every Democratic primary, the delegates are proportionally allocated. So when Hillary Clinton wins by a 51-49, the delegate count only gives her a net increase of one. On the Republican side, they have winner-take-all states.
Starting March 15th.
Starting March 15th.
Yeah.
So Trump can rack up a lot of delegates even without getting a majority of the vote if he simply gets a simple plurality.
Well, yeah, and heaven help a mariner if he takes a place like Ohio.
Well, if he wins Ohio and Florida, the Republican race is over, in my opinion, because, you know, the delegates from those two states alone are going to get him like, you know, halfway there, about halfway there probably, you know.
Yeah, but don't count out California.
Well, that's true. But Trump is going to have a lot of popularity in California.
Yeah, well, there's a bunch of dumb assholes in California.
Does that include us, Roger?
All the double Xers and State of Jefferson types.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
The don't tread on me type.
Yeah, the don't read to me. I've got one of those guys in my neighborhood. Whenever I see his truck out there as I'm driving by, I comment to my son, "Oh, Brian, there's a don't read to me person with the urine-colored snake flag from his pickup truck." You know, it's got like a
flag. One of the people that goes to the watering hole I spend time at has taken duct tape kind of stuff, and on the windows of his camper shell, he's put Trump on it. I am just so goddamn tempted to get out some duct tape, and above it, there's enough room, and just put an F-U-C-K right above it. And the only reason I don't do it is because I know he would know who did it.
Okay.
If I did that. But, I mean, this guy is a delta double minus zero laborer with absolutely no money whatsoever, and why he thinks a billionaire is going to improve his lifestyle, and you can't talk to him. Just can't talk to him. He's so goddamn ignorant. But that's where I live.
Indeed.
Eddie, I'm going to leave all you folks. The wife's talking
to
me about
Okay, what's on? Just tell us before you go, what's on the pizza?
Oh, I haven't ordered it yet, but we usually do an all-meat marvel and a vegetarian. And the vegetarian has artichoke hearts and that kind of stuff, and the all-meat has sausage, pepperoni, salami, and linguica.
Yeah, sign me up for that one.
Yeah, well, that's why I get half of the all-meat, because that's what I like. vegetarians can eat whatever the hell they want.
You unreconstructed carnivore, you.
Oh yeah, man. There's a guy that does a barbecue, and he asked, "How do you want it?" And I said, "I want it rare enough. I'll put it back in the freezer. It'll start mooing at me."
I had a buddy who ordered his steak and said, "Slap it around till it's hot and angry, and hand it to me."
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyhow, you all folks take care. I'll catch you next week.
Have a great weekend, Roger.
Have a good one, Roger.
Hey, by the way, what happened to Tracy? she just kind of poof and was gone.
Her migraine might have kicked in.
Okay, just worried. Wanted to make sure we didn't, like, you know, the, you know, fart in the room or something. And you know.
No, she messaged me earlier that she'd just gotten home and that she had a migraine headache.
Yeah, I think
she wanted to join, but it probably kicked in. And
well, and the booger conversation may have pushed her over the edge, and for that I apologize. And by the way, a reminder, Brother Deacon Asa has a $50 challenge on the table. We got $200 to raise this evening, and we are at zero. So that's just out there.
Friday Night Miracles this week, huh?
Well, I mean, it was a hell of a hole last week, and that may have worn people out. I mean, could very well be, but there is a challenge out there, and I kind of hate to. Well, I do. I hate to let one of those blow by. Sorry, I have to reach over here for a ginger ale in the midst of a sneezing fit. And honest to God, I'm seriously considering, as far as the weekend is concerned, really just climbing into bed, the doing codeine cough syrup shooters, and maybe just waking up long enough to comprehend the pageant on Sunday night in a haze or a stupor. I can't do decongestants because of my blood pressure. And it makes me feel like the hairs on my head are jumping around from, you know, individually from follicle to follicle.
I've been relatively lucky. I've not had any major illnesses in years.
Oh, this just came out of nowhere.
Or flu-like symptoms, or
yeah, and
all
the thing,
I know is it's gonna rain like nobody's business this weekend. Everybody's talking about it. Oh, there's a big storm coming in. It's going to rip up.
And that's a good thing, right?
Bring it on. It can't get any greener than it is now.
Yeah. Well, it's not like you're not still making up for a deficit.
Well, everything just went nuts this year. When you add water and everything goes nuts. I mean, my neighbor across the street, they let their lawn basically die, and their lawn is green as green can be right now. And the back lot, I mean, just Emerald Isle.
Oh, and hey, Charlie in Tennessee's popped in. Good evening, Charlie.
Good evening. Got my bubble popped this week. Looks like Hillary and Trump got the Republican and Democratic primary.
Well, they're in Tennessee. Yeah,
you got to vote then.
Yeah, I actually got up early that morning and got up at 6 o'clock and went down to the polling place and cast my vote because I had to go to work at 10.
Did you get a fancy sticker?
Yeah, I got one that said I voted.
I like the one that. I like the one that Carol Baker posted that said, I continued the system of my own oppression.
Yeah, I cannot understand why people would vote for Trump or Hillary. I mean,
yeah, well,
it just doesn't make any sense. I mean, if you're a common working person, I mean, the only sensible candidate to vote for is Bernie Sanders.
Well, I don't know what you do with social media or who you talk to or anything, Charlie. But you can again, you know, you can gauge. It's like you can gauge the Hillary campaign by the tenor and tone of its of her adherents. They get nasty and they get worried.
Yeah. Well, maybe Trump will get enough of the states that, you know, he can be the nominee. I don't know. Yeah. And did I say Trump? I meant Bernie Sanders. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Oh, no worries, no worries. I'm just a little bit slow here. Whatever this bug is, yeah.
What is that noise?
What noise?
Sound like a runaway cricket or something.
Oh, that was one of the power supplies.
I like a runaway cricket. That brought up something great.
Oh, and hey, Jenny, we haven't quite caught on to the general notion of Friday Fish Fry here yet.
Oh my God!
My friends over at Secret Sandwich Society, at least during Lent, are doing fried fish sandwiches on Friday. And I had lunch with Dr. Bill today, and we tried it. And you know, when a Boston guy looks up and says, "This is the best fried fish sandwich I've ever had in my life," you know they're doing something right. So it ain't Friday Fish Fry in Wisconsin, but I had my Friday fish today.
That's awesome. In high school or grade school, we always had fish on Friday during Lent, and it always drove me crazy because I wasn't Catholic. And then I ate fish once in a while, but then when I was pregnant, I worked at a fish restaurant. And then after that, I'm like, I am not eating fish ever again. And I went out for a fish fry about a month ago. And I've been like, oh my God, it's Friday. I want to go back for a fish fry. It was so delicious.
Oh, I had no concept of it.
Oh, it was good.
And it's all year long.
The last place I went to have a fish fry, and then they brought out little round, warm, powdered donut circles, you know,
yeah,
for dessert. Oh my God, it was so good. And the fish, it wasn't like that fluffy fish, it was sort of more flat with a lot of beer breading on it. And oh,
well,
I sat down in a
little roadhouse bar on a Friday evening in like Marengo, Ashland County, Wisconsin, and tucked into the single most beautiful piece of fried walleye it was the most beautiful piece of fried fish I've ever had in my life.
Yep.
And it's etched in my memory. You know, I used to be a big catfish guy. Catfish can't hold a candle to a good piece of walleye.
Exactly. Nice and flaky and yeah. Yeah.
And sweet. It's sweet, and it's
not expensive.
Well, I found out that it kind of is when you get down here. If I walk into my local Kroger's, it's like $15 a pound.
Yeah, but in Wisconsin, it's not. I mean, if you go out for a fish fry, I mean, unless you go someplace nice. Did you ever have an old fashioned?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Fish fry and an old fashioned, you know. Talking $10. Delicious. Now you're making me hungry.
Oh, and I'm starving. happy news. $10 of the $50 challenge that Asa put on the table has been met. Thank you very, very kindly, Jules. It is much appreciated indeed. And you know, just so that means overall we've got $190 to go for the evening.
Bob.
Yes.
There's a church down here in Nashville. It's Woodmont Bible Church, and they are actively involved in politics. I wonder how you get them to lose their tax exempt status.
Well, it starts with a complaint to the IRS.
Ah, okay.
And the complaint has to, if you want it to go anywhere, I don't know if Rick's still with us, but...
I am.
If you want it to go anywhere, it needs to be pretty well documented. You need video or audio of the preacher politicking in the pulpit.
Well, this was on 99.7 WTN. They all got together at this little church to watch the election returns for the primary.
I'm guessing that wouldn't be a violation of their 501c3 status in and of itself.
Yeah.
Where you cross the line, And you know, some of these militant religion industry evangelicals do it merrily. Where you cross the line is where you say, I refuse to be any longer oppressed by the government. And because I am not ashamed of my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, I'm standing here in the pulpit to tell you that if you don't vote, if and you don't vote for Ted Cruz, you're going to burn in the burning everlasting flames of hell. Now, when he does that, Rick?
Yeah, that's a problem. That's that crosses a line into political advocacy there. But keep in mind, the IRS has been defanged over the last few years. This whole controversy over the treatment of the of groups like GPS, Crossroads GPS, is a 501c3 tax exempt org, like a social welfare org. They were recently granted their exemption. So, I mean, the IRS has become really pretty much of a paper tiger. And the only in recent memory, the only church that's gotten in trouble with the IRS for politicking was a very progressive-minded church during the Bush years.
I think it was an Episcopalian church, wasn't it?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I wouldn't put a whole lot of stock into that. Plus, I mean, the IRS doesn't even have anywhere near the manpower to track down these fraudsters who make calls claiming to be from the IRS, saying that unless you pay up or, you know, give them a prepaid debit card, you know, you're going to, you know, the police are going to show up and you're going to get arrested for tax fraud or whatever. And I got two calls last year for that, and reported the first one I got to TIGTA, which is the Treasury Inspector General's office. They basically, you know, police violations like that. It's a criminal, you know, it's a criminal investigation arm, the internal police of the IRS. And they gotten so many of those that they never got back to me. And I've gotten two more calls this year already, this tax season already. So, you know, the chances of the IRS doing anything, you know, if they can't go, if they don't have enough resources to go after the fraudsters, you think they're going to go after these, you know, evangelical pastors that, you know, cross the line from information to advocacy. Yeah.
Right. So. But the only way you've got any hope at all is to catch them red handed.
Right.
Or ham-fisted. Right. Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. I guess what you do is you do like a sting, you know? You like maybe arrange to have like, you know, okay, I'm going to send this amount of money to you by Western Union. You know, you need to be there at such and such a time. And then you call the you know, the police or whatever, or the postal. I guess it would be probably the postal inspectors that would be involved in something like that. And you nail them, you know, when they show up, you know? But sorry to throw a wet blanket on that idea, Jack. Or Charles, I mean.
Yeah. What do you think? Well, the latest Bundy Bunch guy that got ramped up by the FBI out of New Hampshire or somewhere.
Well, I know that our buddy the Angry Indian was following it closely, and he wasn't at all surprised because the guy was up to his armpits in the Bunkerville rebellion.
He was also a co-chair for Trump's campaign.
Bingo.
Oh my God, seriously?
And his wife was a state representative.
Oh God.
Oh, in New Hampshire. A member of the House, the state house in New Hampshire.
Wow.
And his wife wrote a guy who works with his wife wrote, FBI just rolled up with lots of vehicles and agents who were in tactical gear. They forced their way into Jerry Delamis' and Sue's condo with weapons drawn and arrested Jerry and took him away. Well, would anybody care to guess why they had weapons drawn?
Because those boogers were exercising their Second Amendment rights, right?
Well, yeah, they're known to be all gunned up.
Yeah. Exactly.
He's Trump's Jerry Delamis is Trump's co-chair for Veterans for Trump.
Oh God. Well, I can't say I'm surprised. You know, I mean, that's the kind of people that he's, you know, that the Adolf Hitler is attracting to his campaign, you know, or the heir apparent, as the case may be.
And make America hate again.
There you go. There you go.
Did anybody see that gif of Trump's face with the swinging swastika that showed Adolf Hitler's face?
Up, 849. Gerald!
Gerald's not even on the front porch. How the hell can he be the winner this time, Bob?
He's magic that way.
Jeez. I've got to find out where he buys his underwear, man. Maybe I'll buy him there. That's the wrong scam.
Wrong religion.
Yeah, right. That's the mint raw money deal.
Yes.
Mint raw money.
Oh, Bob, speaking of underwear.
Yes?
Did you see the latest episode of The Outsiders?
I haven't yet. I've been having a problem.
Damn.
Don't ruin it. No, for some reason or another, I have not been able to connect.
Oh.
What's The Outsiders?
It's a series on WGN America, and it's about a clan of sort of off the grid, out of the culture, live to themselves, hillbillies, up on top of a mountain that a coal company wants to blow up.
The first three
episodes are online, and then after that you gotta find a way.
Devin fixed me up with a new link the other night.
Okay.
I don't have TV, so
hopefully after the first season they'll put it up for binge viewing, maybe on Netflix or Amazon Prime or something.
Awesome.
And I'm rooting for him to get a second season because I don't think they can wrap all this stuff up in one season. They got too many storylines open, and they're all really cool. In fact, I need to work on.
Okay, I just entered a link in the Skype chat. You can click next link, next episode on it, and it'll go to the next episode. That's the link Devin gave me.
Excellent.
Okay.
And I'll put it in Horn Chat also.
Just maybe shoot it to me in an email.
Okay, I'll do that.
Because none of the stuff I'm doing here in the studio, Agnes and I have made a habit of watching it together, so I've got to use a different device.
Okay, I'll put it in the email.
Thanks. It's fun. Like I said, you can watch the first three episodes at WGNAmerica.com, Jenny, and that's where you got to start, because if you just jump in medias res, you'll get lost. I'd love to know if any of my buddies up in the Northwoods are watching it. I can think of a couple that would probably find it to be a real hoot.
It's a really good show. I just got into it. I tried to get my son to watch it, but he's not into it so much. My favorite episode so far is the battle of the coal mining vehicles. That was great.
Oh, no, the jousting? Yes.
Yeah, that was great. Well, not the jousting. The they vandalized a couple of,
Easy, okay. Spoilers.
Spoiler alert. I already blew a spoiler from Bob saying underwear.
Have you watched the fifth episode yet, Bob?
No.
Oh, shit. I thought you had. Okay. Never mind. Okay.
And I kind of got spoilered on what? Episode three or four? Yeah, it was. I think Tracy delivered the spoiler on three.
Oh.
Which I'm not going to repeat for Jenny's sake.
Have you seen the Animal Trap show yet?
Did it make good, dude?
Okay.
You're not giving anything away. It's this whole thing.
No spoilers.
Okay, no more. I'm going to zip it here.
Shut it, Rick.
It's shut.
Jules asked to come in at the end here.
Hey, Jules. Thanks for kicking in. I appreciate it.
Yeah,
Yep, I just wanted to say real quick, I know a lot of people are on really tight budgets. I was able to, well, I finally remembered at the first of the month to make my to make a donation. I wanted to set up a monthly donation and join the $10 a month club, but I have to do it the first of the month because I'm on SSDI. And if I don't do it then I'll forget, and I don't want it taken out at the end of the month because I'll forget that it's being taken out, and yeah, I'll get in a mess at the end of the month. So, but people that are on really restricted budgets, especially people that are on disability or whatnot, that feel that they can't donate or such not, I would suggest to them to look into, do a disability search for their local area and look into assistance programs to see if they can get any assistance with things in their community to help free up their budgets so that they have extra money for food or other things. And then maybe they might be able to kick in a dollar or two or whatnot to if they want to help out with, like, the horn. Or whatnot.
Well, thank you, Jules. Thank you.
Because I know a lot of people feel guilty for not being able to help out. So,
well, nobody ever needs to feel guilty. I don't want anybody to ever feel guilty.
Oh, I know that, and I know no one does want to feel guilty. But I know a lot of people want to help out, and they can't. And they you know, like I wanted to help out in a number of positions, and I've not been able to. But that's the only way that I'm able to, you know, help out here or there with different things is because I've been able to get assistance in other areas, and so I scrunch and scrimp in other areas, and so I use a little extra money here or there to be able to donate to causes that I find are worthy, and yours is definitely one of those. But even if not, if people are finding that they're struggling in places, I would suggest that they get a hold of those assistance programs because they're in every community.
Well, thank you very kindly indeed. And thanks to all of our subscribers. Jenny's a subscriber, for instance.
Yeah, Jules, I'm in the same place as you, and I'm usually always consistently broke. So I subscribe for $5 a month, which, you know, it works out for me. So, and then it was $10 a month, but... You know, I really appreciate listening to Bob and hearing everybody all the, you know, 5 days a week. So that was a really good suggestion.
Yeah, and I mean, even if people, you know, just need to find an extra $5 or $10 so that they have some extra food money, you know, get a hold of their disability assistance programs or whatnot because it's well worth it. And, you know, if they find they have a dollar or two extra and they can give it to you, then that's great too.
Well, thanks. Thanks to both of you. We got to get out of here. It's a little more than 2 minutes before the hour. Malloy is on the way over at MikeMalloy.com, Progressive Voices. And I want to thank everybody for a rousing conversation. Like I've been saying, we've been having some fantastic Fridays on the front porch, and I thank you all very, very kindly. Thank you, Sparky. Thank you, Rick, for jumping in. Thanks, Jenny. Thanks for thanks to Charles and to Jules and to Ron and to Roger and to Tracy. And I hope Tracy gets to feeling better. Thank you all very, very kindly. Have a wonderful weekend. I don't know. Maybe I'll be tweeting the Democratic pageant come Sunday. Just depends on how I feel. I'd just really like it if this bug would go the hell away. Because I don't like this constant feeling that I'm going to have to mute the mic and sneeze all over the place. Ugh. But thanks again, and have a lovely weekend. And we'll be back with Dr. Bill and me, more on Monday. Great news, breaking at the last moment. Thank you, Gary. Thank you, Labor Man. The rest of ACE's challenge has been met, and in point of fact, we have only $40 to go now. Let's call it $40 to go in fundraising for the evening. Thank you very kindly, Gary. Time to get out of here. Have a wonderful weekend. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Lottie and Sparky in the chat room, thank you. To our news ninjas, please get well soon, Gene. Thank you to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you this evening for getting us on air. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.